This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Amy Dunphy. Now, last week, we were very, very happy at the fact that one of our best contributors, Nicola Tallant, investigations editor of Sunday World, and some of our team who work on The Stand, won the Podcast of the Year award at the Digital Media Awards. They won it for The Witness, in his own words, a remarkable story of a young man who went into the Witness Protection Program, who did the state some service. He gave evidence very courageously against a criminal who had abused him in many ways. It's a remarkable story of courage and redemption as well. And Nicola Tallant is the person mainly responsible for it. I should mention Jane Gogan, who is the managing director of The Stand, produced it. And Ian Mullaney also very involved. And to all of them, we'd like to say congratulations publicly. And we're joined now by Nicola to discuss The Witness in his own words and where it's gone and how Joey, who is the central character in it, has done. Nicola, congratulations on the award. It's a hugely significant award, not just because you won it and our Stand colleagues won it, but because it vindicated Joey and his mother, Mary, and it's a huge, big deal for them. How is Joey now? And we know the person that he testified against is due for release now from prison. Can you tell us that story now?
Yeah, he's doing good and was delighted with obviously our win at the Digital Media Awards, which was great, really, for all concerned and for his story, which was something so different to most things we hear. Most of the time, it's the likes of you or I talking about this world. But yes, when you actually have somebody who has been in it, it gives you just a really proper ringside seat of what, you know, what is going on there and how fear is used as an element of the control that a lot of dealers have over young people like Joey, and how they can be isolated from their families, from their friends, from their previous lives, and just be drawn in so much into that world. And I think that there's a lot of kids out there today as we speak who are in a similar position that Joey was once in, and they feel trapped. And, you know, there's generations of kids being groomed into gangland crime. And we don't seem as a society to be doing much about it. We seem to be standing blindly by.
Yes.
And being outraged if we see a shooting outside of a working class area, which is, you know, if there's a shooting in Balls Bridge, you can be damn sure it will make the front page of every newspaper.
Yeah.
Just yesterday, there's a shooting in Ballyfermot, a gangland shooting last night. There's a person who's in critical condition in hospital at the moment. But, you know,
it's not reported in this morning's newspapers, the ones I've seen.
No, it's sort of like, you know, sometimes these shootings are just becoming a sidebar nowadays. They can be so frequent, or they're seen as just part and parcel of that world. And in a way, we're getting kind of used to gun crime in this country, and we're getting used to hearing about these faceless victims who die. We know very little about where they've come from, who they were, or how they got mixed up in that world. And
yes, and that's what's so valuable and fascinating about The Witness in his own words. It's been an international success as well, a big one. And what's unique is that it's Joey telling his story in his own words, and it's his perspective. But the troubling thing about, for example, the shooting in Ballyfermot last night, we understand one person is critical, but the broadsheet newspapers, which I saw today, have no report of this. Now, there was a time when such a shooting would be news everywhere. Mm. And that time appears to have passed. The question, and you mentioned there, Nicola, about other young people who find themselves working for crime godfathers, really, which you can only describe them as, who exploit these young people. They lure them in, and they are themselves then criminals at risk, or maybe not, but there is a grooming process that's continuing, and it's confined really, to certain areas of this and other cities.
Look, there's no question, but their kids are at higher risk of being groomed into gangs in certain areas than they are in others. And that's just a fact of life. The way drug dealing and drug crime operates, it's been funded from outside interests, be they the users of drugs or the people at the very top of the pyramids who are usually not living in this country. They're wholesalers who are sending the drugs in, and they're essentially then there are gangs or units, what you might call cell structures all over the country, headed up perhaps by somebody higher up the chain. And then, as you go down further and further down the chain, you have the lowest members of it will be street dealers, which are often young kids, and they can often be like 10 years of age.
Yes.
And they will be transporting the drugs, and they're literally, dealing them on the streets, like as if it's a shop. Sort of you're going into a shop in some of these areas. Like, I mean, I've actually reported on drug crime for years and gone after the big guys, and it's always a big operation to try, and when I say go after them, we're trying to just sort of really, delve into their world and where they're at and photograph them and show the lifestyles they're leading, and then, to try and compare it with, the crimes that are being committed in their names. But often I have gone out on surveillance operations where we'd be looking at street dealing, and particular, I suppose, street dealing is everywhere. It's no longer a story to just go and see a dealer, but selling drugs on Middle Abbey Street or something. But sometimes if there is a new drug coming in, and there are some very concerning new drugs, very addictive coming in, if there's suggestion that they're being pushed into the market somewhere, we might have a look at that. And the street dealing it's quite fascinating, because unlike when you're trying to get up close and personal with the big guys, the street dealers just do not care, and they aren't aware of their surroundings or who's there. So you can often sit in for hours in a surveillance van just watching it, and they won't even be bothered that there's a car out of place in their area, or there might be somebody in it looking at them. They use properties as stash houses where they would store the larger part of the drugs, and then the, users' street dealing is really these sort of poly drug users who would have addiction problems, and they don't care.
Poly drug meaning that they take a number of different drugs.
Yeah. And largely they probably would be ultimately heroin addicts, but they'll take anything that they can just to make themselves feel better because they're sick, and they don't care what they have to do to get those drugs. So they'll come to particular areas, and often they'll be buying them off young kids. I remember looking at a scenario that was going on in the city centre once for over a couple of weeks, and you could see the kids on the bicycles, you could see them running in and out of the vacant flats where obviously they had their stash houses.
Yeah.
The buyers would come up the streets. There'd be whispers, you know, kids would go off, they'd come back. Sometimes they'd cycle down on their bicycles to hand over the deal to the addicts who'd then disappear off into the city streets, probably to shoot up. And, you know, that is when you think of those kids and where are those kids coming from? Where are their parents? What sort of a life lies ahead for them? Especially when they go into the criminal justice system, it's very hard then to straighten yourself and get back out of that and get legitimate employment. And it's a mess. And
the other question that arises, Nicola, we have acknowledged on this podcast over the years, thanks to you, the success that the guards have had, and in particular, the Criminal Assets Bureau. But listening to you talk about this open street activity, it occurs to me, and doubtless to many of our listeners, if you can see it, and anyone can see it, where are the guards and do they have the resources to really have a zero tolerance policy in relation to street dealing?
Well, I mean, is that the policy we want? Do we want a zero tolerance policing approach to it? Or do we need something a little bit more innovative?
Well, I have a long time expressed an opinion that the decriminalization of drugs would do a lot of good. And it is, as long as it's a criminal offense, you'll be buying it from a criminal and it will be circulated and controlled by criminals. Whereas there is another scenario where certain drugs can be decriminalized, particularly what they call cannabis, the gateway drugs.
I think the cannabis thing is coming. There's no doubt about that. I think it will remove a lot of that black market from the dealers. But I think really ultimately, when you look at places that, you know, are marginalized, I don't think decriminalizing drugs is actually going to properly fix the issues that are there, because the issues are, you know, an unfair world, really, where, you know, some kids are growing up without the same chances that kids are growing up in middle-class homes. And you know, I think really to look at it from a more holistic point of view, maybe, and we need to start going in there with more education services, more funding being given to a lot of the agencies Yes. that are doing a lot of work. I mean, by decriminalizing drugs, you're probably not going to do anything for the addiction problem, which again is largely, while, you know, you have cocaine addiction on the rise, obviously, and that is more affecting kind of the overall population. But the likes of heroin, which is still there since it arrived in the 1980s, and those addicts are still there, and they need to be really approached from a medical Yes. perspective and from Yes. a caregiving perspective, in the same way you'd approach other sick people. So there's just it's such a wide issue that no one thing will fix it. And you know, as a society, should we be looking at those kids cycling up and down a street, dealing, dealing to sick people, and say, oh, decriminalize it, that'll fix it? What are they going to be doing next? Where will the criminal gangs will still target them? There will still always be crime, and they'll just be targeted to do something else, or there will still be a black market for drugs, I would imagine, even if we decriminalize it, as there's a black market for other things still there. But I mean, it's more a case of trying to get into these communities and give them back a community spirit, maybe, and the community spirit that will help them heal from within. I don't have all the answers to that, but I don't think policing is the way to do that.
Yeah,
I think it has to be involved counselling, and, you know, a lot of these kids are coming from families where there's ongoing addiction issues throughout generations, and they're being parented by people.
There's a big distinction to be made. Sorry to interrupt you, Nicola. A big distinction to be made between people who are drug dependent and the mass market, which is recreational drug users from all backgrounds, middle class, and if there's a higher hierarchy of classes, but They're certainly at their dinner parties, or, you know, it used to be in the nightclubs, which have been closed down now for the best part of 20 months. But there are people who use it because they need it, and they have a medical problem. And there are people who just use it for recreational purposes at the weekend or whatever. And we've seen, have we not, and it's a curious phenomenon, with the closure of nightclubs and pubs for the past 20 months, you might have thought that they were places where drugs were bought and sold and consumed. But there's no sense of a decline in the trade, is there?
No, there wasn't. And there was an expectation at the beginning that it was going to be thwarted. But drug gangs, because they're operating outside the law, they can kind of reorganize themselves very easily. And you have problems starting in the likes of Colombia, which are major political problems.
Yes.
Which has resulted in an overproduction of cocaine. You have the US market believed to be saturated, so they've looked to Europe. Europe is still a growing market. We are obviously a growing market here in Ireland. And yeah, cocaine just seems to be used, whether you're out and about or you're sitting at home on your own watching the television. That was a bit of an eye-opener for me, I have to say. I was naively of the belief that it was recreational, it was used in a social setting. But we definitely saw during that lockdown period that, you know, there was home deliveries of it in the same way as there was pizzas, more high-end meals and everything else.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Let me ask you now about Joey O'Callaghan, who's the central character in The Witness, and who tells the story in his own words. He is approaching, and, you know, all of you who have worked with him and helped to tell his story, this gangster, the particular one that groomed him from the start, who appeared to be a milkman, and Joey was helping on a milk round. Now, he is the person. Can you tell us, Joey testified against him. His name is Brian Kenny. Joey testified against him, and he was given a long sentence for murder. But he's due out, or due for release, and that's imminent, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he basically, Joey testified against him and Thomas Hinchin, who had were both convicted, really, on Joey's witness statements. of the murder of Jonathan O'Reilly, who was murdered outside Clover Hill Prison in 2004. Both were given mandatory life sentences following their conviction. And Thomas Hinchin remains in the main prison system. But when we started making the podcast, The Witness in His Own Words, Kenny started to, well, he had been applying for parole for a long time, but he started to make gains with the parole board. And actually just March of 2020, he was moved from the main prison system to an open prison lock and house.
How long had he been in the main prison system for in his life sentence?
His sentence was, although he was sentenced in 2005, it was backdated to 2004. Now, most people, an average life sentence is 18 years, but he hadn't done 18 years by the time the parole board deemed him fit to move to this open prison lock and house. Now, when he moved there first, the pleasantries he would have usually expected in lock and house were taken from him because of COVID. So the prisoners going out and about and their home visits and all that, they were in lockdown the same as everybody else. So he has started to enjoy days out now, and he has been, on one occasion recently, he was brought to a supermarket where he was able to go around and have a bit of a day out. He sits down, has a coffee. Those days out are becoming more frequent. I understand that he's been let out. He's been let out overnight. It's all part of the trust system. Open prisons are there for people who have been, they've committed an offence, but they're ready to be integrated back into society. And they're there really for prisoners who are supposed to have, you know, either shown remorse, recognised what they've done, or proved that they are intending on being a valued member of society. I mean, there has to be...
Has Kenny shown remorse?
Well, he's never admitted what he did, and he hasn't shown any remorse or anything like that. I mean, he is an unusual character to be moved into open prison. Few gangland criminals are moved into open prison on their way out. Some are, but... you know, many of them aren't. Now, in the same prison recently, Johnny Mangan, a suspected hitman and a very serious criminal, was in lock and house, and it emerged that he was threatening a family in Dublin, claiming that he was owed money for drugs while a incarcerated prisoner and while using a mobile phone to threaten that family. He walked out and never came back, and he escaped. Now, he has since been recaptured and is back in the main prison system. But they're kind of given these privileges that they can take up jobs in the community. They get to see their families. It's very good. There has to be hope at the end of a prison term for every person that goes in.
Yes.
And they have to, people with kids and everything, you'd like to think that they would use their time in prison to better themselves and to come out as a decent member of the community. And that hope, as a democratic society, we have to give to people.
Yes.
We believe in that. We believe that prison is a place for reform, and we believe that human beings can change. But Kenny has never shown that remorse. Joey O'Callaghan has been issued with a number of Garda information messages in recent years, telling him that his life remains under threat.
Yes.
His life is under threat from Brian Kenny. Kenny and Hinchin were both also convicted of threatening to kill Joey O'Callaghan. Nobody else has been convicted of such a thing against O'Callaghan. So, you know, it's easy to put two and two together and understand where the current threat is coming from. So I find it extraordinary that Kenny has somehow managed to convince a parole board that he is ready for release. But, you know, nonetheless, you don't know what's gone on within those parole board meetings.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, Nicola. In those parole board meetings, is the case put that in Kenny's case, it may be the case that he is intent on revenge and he may threaten or have threatened Joey O'Callaghan, and therefore he is in no way rehabilitated, and therefore the whole principle on which he's in an open prison and is going to get released is stood on its head.
So the parole board can only deal with what information they get, and they do they do interview the prisoner. And
but can the guards or can the authorities, the people responsible for public safety, make their case?
Well, Joey O'Callaghan has made his case, and, you know, the victims can write to the parole board. Their letters are read by the convicted criminal. So he has to be very careful, Joey, what he puts into his letter. But he has made the case that he is still afraid of Brian Kenny. He believes that his life remains under threat, and he has evidence to show that his life is under threat, that his solicitor holds the Garda information messages that he's received. But while he has made that case, clearly Kenny is not going to go into a parole board and say that he's hell-bent on revenge. He's going to say the exact opposite, and clearly has, which is why...
Who sits on the parole board, Nicola?
Well, it's an independent body. I mean, previously, and the laws have
changed... Were you ever asked to sit on it?
God, no. I was not.
I wasn't.
No. So the parole board used to have to be sort of rubber-stamped by the Justice Minister. The Justice Minister would rubber-stamp their decisions, but now they are a fully independent body, and their decisions are made on the basis of what information is put before them. And, you know, I don't want to be critical of them as such, because I do think that they have operated on the belief of what they have been put in front of them. But what I would say about Kenny and what Joey would say about Kenny is that he's a very manipulative character. Like, a lot of people like him, especially, you know, he has been accused of sexual assaults against Joey, and people like that tend to have two faces.
Yep.
And two personas, and they are very charming. And Joey says in the podcast how charmed he was and his family were by Kenny when they first met him, and everybody around him appears to have been charmed by him. It was always behind closed doors that this sort of monster came out.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a lot of people like that in the world, and they can be very convincing. And, you know, that's...
They're usually called psychopaths.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, I think anybody who can take up a gun and go and murder a young man, whether they have beef with them or not, is, you know, has to be a sociopath. You have
yes.
to have no empathy or feelings for that person or for their families or for anybody around them who's going to be affected for the rest of their lives by the fact that you just can't get over your beef. By the only way you can do that is by, you know, killing them. So, you know, this is what has gone on. Now, Kenny is enjoying days out, and it's likely that he will be released over the next few years. And that is something that I think Joey O'Callaghan is a person who has to take every day as it comes, and he has to get through every day. And he's got used to doing that. So, you know, when the time comes that Kenny will be released, he will deal with that then. But I think he's just somebody who has had to live in the moment.
So on the basis of what you've told us, bearing in mind the Garda information messages, which are given to criminals as well, whose lives are under threat, and given the fact that Kenny has shown no remorse, we can say that this case demonstrates to some extent, to a considerable extent, that in order to get parole, you don't have to show remorse, and you can go on issuing threats.
Well, you know, perhaps Kenny showed remorse to the parole board. I don't know what went on in those meetings with him or how they came to their decision. I have no access to that.
No, I understand that. And we don't want to be provocative.
Mm.
But either the Garda information messages are right, in which case Kenny is a threat to Joey O'Callaghan and has not shown remorse, or they're wrong, in which case the parole board is right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they're the facts, aren't they? That they
yep.
he has been issued with these guard information messages. He remains under a person. I don't want to go into his personal security, but let's just say that he has very good liaison in the jurisdiction he's living in, and he has liaison with the guards as well. So, you know, that's where he's at, and he certainly is living as a man under threat. And yet Kenny seems to be able to convince the parole board that he's no threat to anybody. So, you know, look, some say that justice is an ass. And
yeah.
the fact of the matter is that Joey O'Callaghan lives the rest of his life with a life sentence for doing the right thing. And Kenny is coming to the end of his, and he's still a young enough man. He's only in his 50s, and he's looking at coming out to a whole new world. He was a bully, and he was somebody who has been, I think, largely exposed as somebody who was trying to play every side. He would have claimed quite openly that he had an informant. He would have been seen as that by the criminal fraternity that surrounded him. He has been, I think, exposed by Joey in both the book, The Witness, and the podcast as the individual he is. And look, he has been exposed as that. So, you know, how he gets on in the real world again is going to be interesting. I think I've had a lot of contacts from people, very ordinary people listening to it. I've had contacts from teachers, people in the education system who believe that Joey's story is very important and that it should be listened to by kids, you know, to see what life would await them should they make the decision or be, yes, you know, be groomed. It's something that's important for parents, but it's also been listened to people by people within the criminal fraternity, many of whom have contacted me, abhorred by what Kenny did.
Yes.
You know, there are standards within the criminal fraternity.
Yes, I understand that.
There used to be quite high standards. There used to be a time where there was a code. And for many people in it, they still do have a code, and certain things are unacceptable. And I think a lot of things that Brian Kenny did, and lies he told, and abuses he people in his close circle had to live under are not acceptable, even within that world. So,
right,
you know, Kenny has the reality of life on the outside to face. And I think, like many criminals before him, he may discover that times have changed since he's been in jail, and he might not hold that same power he once had.
Okay, Nicola, we're very grateful to you for joining us on The Stand. Nicola Tallant is the investigations editor of The Sunday World. She's also the author of the book, The Witness, and the 10-part podcast that was made with people, Nicola and people associated with The Stand, Ian Mullaney and Jane Gogan in particular. We're very proud and pleased that we won the Digital Media Awards, but more importantly, that Joey's story has been told and he has shown enormous courage. It's a 10-part podcast. It has been internationally successful, and it's a great credit to Nicola in particular, as the journalist who saw this through, that it is there and anybody can listen to it. It's easy to find. We're grateful to Nicola. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.